I have a very special guest on Simply Folk. Garnet Rogers is a powerful singer-songwriter and multi-instrumentalist from Canada, and his music graces our airwaves in many forms and has done for about 30 years now. Welcome to WPR, Garnet.
Well, it's nice to be here.
I'm glad you came. You have many fans in Wisconsin.
There are very many forgiving people in this state.
Well, first I have to set the stage. Our engineer today is Brittany True, and she told me beforehand that she grew up going to concerts with her mother bringing her.
I told her, that's probably a registered with the UN as child abuse now.
Well, and also our receptionist, Kathleen Condon, who at the other end of the spectrum is a grandmother, and she's been listening to you for many of the decades that you've been playing. So I ask you, what is your audience like these days?
It ranges from, seniors to young kids. And I was playing up in Duluth Sunday night, and it was sort of the usual smattering of sort of middle-aged to elderly people, but a lot of young people as well. And this young couple who were just, they were lovely, sweet young kids, probably mid-20s. And they were just so excited about, they wanted to talk to me about music, and I was sort of talking to them about Ray Vaughan Williams, and they'd never heard of him, and it's just really exciting to when someone catches on to something that you're doing, but you can sort of say, well, here's where I stole that from, and that's,
wow.
And you give them a whole list of references and stuff, and I just want. They were a sweet young couple. I wanted to adopt them. They were lovely.
Neat. We'll have to explore Vaughan Williams in a minute, but why don't we start with some music? What would you like to start with?
I'll do this one. It's a song I wrote for my friend Bill Morrissey, who we lost a few years ago. So Bill and I traveled together for off and on for a couple of years. When you get there, and I know you'll go, just a couple of things you'll need to know. They got a big old gate, that's just for sure. They've been waiting on you forever. There's a house beneath some trees. There's a good old car, still starts with E. Pull down the visor, you'll find the keys. Anytime you need to go, there's a split cane rod with 2-pound tears. There's an old felt hat you like the best. There's a book of flies and a canvas vest. Hallway by the door, and there's a river deep and cool. Lots of fish and sheltered pools. Those damn trout, they still make you look a fool. There's just so much even God can do. There's lots of shows to do in the little towns. Good people come from miles around. They got some kind of genius up there. Does the sound. They always pay in cash. Brand new strings on the old guitar. There's a dark-eyed girl sitting at the bar, and that charm of yours is gonna take you far. You might just win her with your sweet smile. Thank you. you get there, say hello for me. Yeah, there's music, there's books and there's poetry. Lots of friends for you to see. Yeah, tell them all hello. River flows by deep and fast. Clouds fill the sky, they don't last. I've lost track of all the souls who've passed, like shadows on the water, like shadows on the water.
A song to honor Bill Morrissey. You know, I said at the beginning that your songs are powerful, and that is a deeply, deeply powerful song. It was really gorgeous and so full of wonderful evocation.
Well, you know, Bill was a fly fisherman, and I don't have any concept of the afterlife. I kind of don't really believe in the afterlife, per se. I was just trying to think, trying to imagine what would be good for, what would be good for him, and there were a lot of other verses got written, but you know, a lot of the times just knowing what to pare down and throw out, and you know, particularly when you're writing about someone you really cared about, and you're trying to just do them justice, and I realized suddenly that, you know, Bill's music particularly was such was so spare and so carefully crafted and so elegantly and concisely written, that to do something really big about him was just wrong. So I was just trying to think, well, what would Bill do in this case, you know? And you know, we talked a lot about writing in the days when we were traveling together, and it was before actually I even started doing my own songs. We were traveling around together, and just getting to watch him in his process in those days back in, it was around 84, 85, and and you know, you see the way people put things together and what they discard in terms of songwriting, and I think that was one of Bill's greatest strengths, was his knowledge of what to leave out and let the listener bring their own experience to it.
I would say you two are kindred spirits in that way. I find your music much the same in that you, with a few carefully chosen words and the music to support them, you just pack a very powerful punch.
Well, it's kind of you to put me in the same box with him. We were kindred spirits in a lot of ways. We both of us had a serious drinking problem, so you know, we carried that with us as well, and that was one of the hardest parts about losing him, was I was able to quit back in 88, and Bill struggled with it for the rest of his life, and I would see him from time to time, and it just was always, you just knew that you might be seeing him for the last time, particularly the last 10 or so years. And the last time I saw him was in Kansas City. And I knew he was playing there, and I just finished a run with Lucy Kaplansky, and I got word that he was in Kansas City, and sought out the club and found him, and you know, I just went backstage, and it's like it's like I'd been out of the room for 5 minutes. You know, he just kind of looked up, and he was putting new strings on his guitar, and he was fresh out of rehab. He was like 6 weeks out of rehab, and he looked so good, and he sounded so good, and he seemed so happy and buoyant, and very much unlike the guy that I knew a lot of years ago, where, you know, he just seemed so down and defeated and struggling with his disease. And I walked into the room, and he just kind of looked at me, and he says, you know, when you go into rehab, they take a Polaroid picture of you when you arrive, and then 6 weeks later when you leave, they give you that Polaroid picture so you can see what you looked like. And he said, my picture made Nick Nolte's arrest picture look like a prom photo. I don't know if you remember that.
Yes,
Nick Nolte
I do. Oh my gosh, this must have been pretty bad.
Yeah, but he, he just had such a great sense of humor. They're both dark and light. You know, he saw the humor in the dark stuff, and he also saw the sweetness. And I don't know what there was in there that made him that. Whatever demon was in there, I don't think anyone ever really found out.
Yeah, and the addiction got him in the end, didn't it?
Yeah. I was one of the lucky ones.
Your music deals with topics like gratitude and just some really deep kinds of concepts. And I wonder if having stopped drinking or being in recovery in any way informs how you write or what you write.
I think it has to, maybe not consciously, but certainly being sober. I probably talk about it more than people really need to hear, but I think every once in a while I think there's somebody in the audience who might be struggling with it, and it might be worth saying a few words about it on stage. I try to make a joke about it, of course, but and my whole story about detoxing is kind of dark humor, but I think trying to find the, if you can sort out what it was that made you go down that path, and it's very self-destructive. And if you can find out what that was, and then overcome it, and then try to find the beautiful part of, and be grateful for just small stuff. And I'm not a proponent of the 12-step program particularly either. I'm not much of a person for organization, but there are some things about the 12-step regimen that makes sense, like the one day at a time and trying to see the larger picture, saying, well, I'll just do this one little thing here. And sometimes that just means you're stopping to look at something and maybe celebrate it a little bit. And I think that's a large part of what I'm trying to do with songs in later years is just celebrate little tiny things.
Your song, It's a Gift, mm-hmm. on your newest release kind of alludes to that. That's just a lovely one about really noticing everything through the day.
Yeah, it's I bought a house in Nova Scotia 5 years ago, and it's right in the same town where my mother grew up and was born in, and it's where my family's lived for over 200 years. So it's kind of a huge connection to my roots, and to be able to go back there and it's where I spent my childhood as well. I know that house from my childhood, and I suddenly I've got this place and I've got a connection. I have friends there and community and. I don't go there a lot, but it's eventually where I expect to end up, I'm hoping. And that song was just kind of a celebration of just, it's very specific to, there are little touchstones in that song that, I'll play the song, but it's the boy on the boy tossing pebbles is actually a young friend of mine, and the Iron Bridge is the Iron Bridge that I, spent time on when I was a kid, and it talks about boiling tea, and that's every day of my life when I was a child during the summer. My parents would just get me out of the house; they'd send me down to the shore with a billy can and a jug of water and a cheese sandwich and a couple of boiled eggs, and get lost. And I'd have free leave to spend the whole day by the seashore and by myself with a book or a sketch pad or whatever. It was, or a raft or a stolen rowboat or something. And I could fool around on the water. And it was really like I think I had one of the last Tom Sawyer childhoods, in this world. It was lovely.
Oh, it sounds wonderful. Would you mind playing the song?
Yeah, I can.
Oh,
that'd
be
sure.
Terrific.
A
it's a gift to me this waking, the hours before the sunrise. It's a gift to me this light that gilds the waves across the bay. It's a gift to me the silence of this old house in the morning. Watch the sky and the weather, and I begin another day. It's a gift to me these raucous gulls that wheel outside my window. I watch the sun climb higher and set to fire the morning dew. Small boats outside my window reflect their colors to the water. Like gaudy gypsy caravans, bright yellow, red and blue. There's a young boy tossing pebbles in a tide pool in the channel. There's an old dog on an errand on his way toward the town. I hear the voices of my neighbors. See a sail out past the island. Sunlight through the gull's bright wings, slowly circling down. While as a boy I walk these broken roads from sunrise till evening. I knew each stone and tree that final mile up to the hill. From the starlight through the clouds, the dark trees on the horizon. Smell of rain and wood smoke, I remember all so well. Now I walk out past the iron bridge that reaches to the island. Past brightly painted houses scattered down along the shore. I build my fire, I boil my tea, I stare out at the water. Once again I am that little kid. Was long years before. There's a heron in the shadows staring at his own reflection. There's a brown trout in the shallows in the lake behind the hill. He waits wide-eyed and silent in the cold and tea-brown water. He's like my heart before I knew you. Cold and dark and still. Give to me this sunset burning down the far horizon. And to the east the fat moon rises past the steeple on the hill. And this day that I've been given to walk and watch and wonder. Night falls upon the little town, the stars are bright and chill. It's a gift to me these stars. Circle slowly round the rooftops. I turn my face to skyward to breathe in their ancient light. My long ears hover around me as I stand there in the darkness. Night wind rises up and stirs the grass and whispers past me in the night. Give to me the sun and the storm, the sky and the wind and water. This harbor town that opens to a sea of endless blue. As the sky grows bright above me, my cup is running over. And everything I have before me, love, I'd give it all to you. Thank you.
song is called It's a Gift. Garnet Rogers is my guest on Simply Folk. I'm Stephanie Elkins, and that is from his newest CD. It's called Summer's End, just loaded with beautiful songs. That song in itself is a gift. Thank you for that.
Oh, it's weird. In terms of songwriting, I wrote that song in the morning, and then later in the afternoon, I wrote that really nasty song about Welcome to Hell. It's like two completely polar opposite songs in the same day, and I thought, well, this is a really weird day.
Yeah.
And every once in a while, I'll have one like that, where two songs come together, and they're so totally different from each other.
You tour a lot. You're on the road a lot. You do a lot of shows,
it seems. Not as much as I used to, yeah.
Do you have to take time to sort of be introspective for the times that you're out of yourself, say? I mean, paraphrasing there, you know what I mean? Being on stage.
I seem to do most of the writing on the road, in the van, just driving along. And, if you have two consecutive thoughts in a row, usually you'll end up putting them in rhyme. And if you're a good little folk singer, you write them down in your book.
Got to capture them while they come.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then eventually you look at these little squiggles and lines and stuff, and you have an idea that maybe this is what I'm thinking about or what's on my mind.
You mentioned Rayfawn Williams when we first started, and I'm wondering what your musical background was growing up. Did you grow up with music in the schools or music in your home, or how'd you learn about Vaughn Williams?
Just through my own explorations. We had music in the home in the sense that my brother and I were always encouraged to play. You know, mom and dad were very encouraging. They didn't play themselves.
They didn't play, but did you guys take lessons or anything like that?
No. Stan took French horn in high school. I tried to take flute, and I was told by the teacher that I had no music ability whatsoever. And threw me out.
That can be damaging. Darn.
Yeah, I'd like to find that guy now, but he's probably dead. But anyway... We were just exposed to everything when we were kids.
Nice.
Back in the 60s and 70s, you just had this sense that anything was possible. And you'd hear all this different music, and there was no genre, there was no, packaging of music, so to speak, the way it is now. Formulaic music, and... So you'd hear something that might lead you on to something else, and you'd explore that even further. And we listened to a lot of opera when I was a kid, and orchestral music, and I was a big fan of Haydn and Handel. And I heard this Ralph Vaughan Williams piece called... I think Fantasia on a piece by Thomas Tallis, or Fantasia on a theme by Thomas Tallis. And it's probably one of my favorite pieces of music on the planet, and it's about 16 minutes of just this kind of amorphous, beautiful thing. I don't know if you're familiar with the piece.
I sure am. Yeah, it's gorgeous.
Yeah. I love it, and I've got about 15 recordings of it. And oddly enough, that one sort of orchestral piece has sort of informed some of my electric guitar playing, where I'm trying to put together layers and stuff and make it not sound like an electric guitar, but it's more just a huge wash of sound.
It's interesting you say that, because that's one of the things I wanted to ask about, because some of the productions, do they just create a feeling? You evoke this sense with these layers of sound that are... just unbelievable. I'm thinking of Night Drive, just because that's one that our listeners love so much, and the way that starts, and then a lot of your newer stuff too is it's really neat how you build those.
Yeah, it's partly you hear it in your head when you write it the first place, but then you get in the studio and you start experimenting. And I work with a particularly interesting guy named Scott Merritt, and we're always exploring sounds and sort of going back to, well, what would the Beatles do, you know, and how can we make this sound like a, how can we make this guitar not sound like a guitar?
Right.
And even as very spare as the new album is, there's a lot of stuff there that's just consists of processing sound. There's a song I don't play live at all called Sleeping. And there's it sounds like a very sparse piano track. It's actually about 10 piano tracks that we just sort of cut together in various files, and we just started adding them in. And I was trying to make it sound like the random sound you hear in a hospital late at night.
Mm.
And it was actually words that came to me while I was sitting next to my dad when he was in his final days.
Wow.
So, you know, just these random voices and clangs that you hear.
Yeah.
And it's not a very comfortable song for me to listen to.
No, just that ambient sound and the feeling of being there.
Hmm. Yeah.
Wow. You and your brother played music together for quite a long time. In fact, here at WPR, we have an early recording of the two of you from 1983, I think it is, playing at a club that's no longer in existence called Bunkies.
I remember that gig very well.
Just wonderful. And I think you were playing fiddle.
Yeah, I'd be playing fiddle and flute and some guitar. And that Bunkies gig was notorious for me for the fact that someone got a hold of my drink and dropped something in it.
Oh, dear.
And I was off my nut for the next 2 days.
Wow.
It was lovely.
Ah.
And then the guy had the temerity to write my mother about it and say what a great joke he thought it was.
He wrote your mother about it?
Yeah, I wrote to my mother and said, you know, hey, I put some acid in your son's drink. And it's like, oh, good.
Oh, my gosh.
Well, I'd never taken it, you know. It's just like, oh.
Well, the music was sound, for sure.
Yeah, I was fine up until I had that drink.
Well, you were, 15 or 16 when you started kind of gigging regularly with your brother?
I was still in school, yeah, but I guess I finished school when I was 17 or 18 and just got on the road with him. We had an awful band, and just a terrible, it was a 17-piece folk band.
And did you have accordions?
No, but we had a sitar player. And we had two drummers and two bass players. And we had an interpretive dancer. All on a huge old hippie bus. And we traveled around that for 18 months and made no money. And I finally packed it in. And I quit the band, and Stan quit the band 2 days later. And then one of the bass players quit the band, and we formed a trio. And we decided we could probably starve just as easily under one roof. So, and that set us off. That was in 75.
Yeah, and then it really just kind of built from there.
Very slowly. I think people remember it much differently than it happened.
Hmm. You worked very hard, I imagine.
Yeah, we did. But it was a grind, and we played a lot of bear pits in a lot of places where you just, like, you know, we played a lot of places where there was terrible violence.
Mm.
Northern Canada, mining towns and stuff, and places where we had no business taking folk music, and they didn't want to hear us, and we didn't want to play the stuff they wanted to hear. And would have been in 1979, I guess. Stan ended up spending the night in jail awaiting charges of attempted murder of an audience member.
What?
Yeah, that's the kind of places we played.
Good God.
Yeah.
Well, you're lucky you survived, my God.
Yeah, it was quite awful. It was unbelievable.
Well, some of those isolated communities, I think, really far and wide breed some of that, you know, really heavy drinking and violence and... Yeah,
and we were scared. I mean, that's what violence comes out of, is fear. And we were just two young guys on the road and never knowing when the van might break down or, you know, something terrible might happen.
In the days long before cell phones and...
Cell phones and credit cards. And,
right, yeah. Right. We have time for one more song. What would you like to do?
Well, this is one of the title songs of the new album. It's Summer's End. And there's one, Summer's End 1 is very, is kind of bleak. This one's a little more hopeful. So, as a result of me buying an old boat a couple of years ago. Birches on the riverbank, all dressed in white and gold. Wind is from the northwest now, day is turning cold. This old boat's the ghost of summer's past, and the river smells like rain. We'll turn once more now to the west, to the sun again. Our days are growing shorter, nights are closing in. Surely as the winter comes, spring follows once again, and the sun will green the tender leaves, and the swallows grace the sky. For now we watch the shadows fall, hear the wild geese cry. Seems our times have found us low. Our times we could not shake. Brought us care and stripped us bare. Left us trembling in their wake. I can see the light beyond these hills as the sun slips to the south. Warm bed waits in firelight, in the sweetness of your mouth. If I have a wish for you, it's not for wealth or treasure. I wish for you, sun and wind, rain in perfect measure. Sunlight on clean water, clear starlight in your eyes. Loving arms to hold you in the morning. Now if I have a wish for you, it's not for wealth or treasure. I wish for you, sun and wind, rain in perfect measure, sunlight on clean water, clear starlight in your eyes. My loving arms to hold you, morning. My loving arms to hold you in the morning.
Summer's End, Garnet Rogers, that's the title track from his newest CD, and that's available from your own label, I think, isn't it? Snow Goose?
Always, yeah.
Yeah, that's nice. You've been very independent over the years.
Yeah, it saved us. We got rejected pretty much completely by the, you know, the record companies back in the 70s, and we just realized we had no alternative, so we formed our own record company with our parents, and that's what we did.
And as the music industry has been changing its business model over the years, it's been beneficial for you, I guess.
Yeah, not so much now, because the business model seems to be predicated on me giving away what they sell. So I have people come up to me and tell me how much they love hearing me on Pandora, and where do I go for the free download? You know, and it's hard to maintain my smile.
Yeah.
But and they don't understand. They just do not understand.
No, they don't get it. It's just
the logistics of it.
It's ubiquitous. Everybody does it, and it's.
I made this new record fully cognizant of the fact that it might not ever make its money back, and so far it hasn't.
Wow. Yeah, it's a lot of expenses in the studio and things like that.
Actually, it was very cheap to make. It's just nobody buys records anymore.
Hmm.
It's very strange.
Well, I hope that Wisconsin listeners will buy this record.
I don't want to sound like I'm complaining. I've had a really good run, and I'm able not to work anywhere near as much as I used to because I've managed to put some money away. But it's been strange watching the change of the business.
Yeah, you're not the only one. The whole business is really struggling to figure out how it's going to shake out to be fair.
Yeah,
for musicians. Well, thank you very, very much for spending some time with Wisconsin Public Radio listeners.
Well, thanks so much for having me in. It's been a pleasure.
We really appreciate it. Thanks for sharing your talent and your time.
Well, thank you.